The band has already reached number 2 on the Australian charts, and Boy and Bear play tonight at the Red Palace in D.C. Welcome to the WTMD studios, Boy and Bear. Well, you can say hello.
Hey, hey, thanks.
So you guys all came together from a bunch of different projects. I think you were heading up a solo project at the time, and yeah. The band came from that. Is the Australian music community always so cooperative?
Probably not, to be honest. I think we got fairly lucky with the way things played out with us, but I don't know. Maybe generally speaking, we look out for one another. I think bands do, at least.
Do people interchange in bands as they go on, or certain friendships and things like that?
There definitely is. I just think it's to a lesser extent to what you see over here in the States. Like, it's, I think the industry is just by nature, it's so much bigger, and there's so many more people playing, and it's
in
more
the
sustainable.
States, not in Australia.
In the States. So that's what I said. But so that's why I definitely, I think it's not to the same extent.
So Moonfire was recorded in Nashville and with Joe Ciccarelli, who many people here in the States recognize from My Morning Jacket. How did Joe come into the project, and why did you record in the United States rather than Australia?
Joe came into the project through, essentially, we had a bunch of producers we were talking to, and we got on the phone to Joe a couple of months out, or probably 6 months out from doing the record, and we really liked his vibe. And I think because there are a lot of bands at the moment doing this indie folk thing, it was important that we tried to do something a little bit different. We didn't just want to do a kind of a big low-end organic sound. We wanted someone to help us sculpt some sort of sonic landscape. And, you know, from the records we heard that Joe had done, he definitely had, you know, that had that sonic, really interesting contemporary kind of approach to it. So I don't know. We liked that, and hence got him on board.
That's great. So were you worried that creating your first full length in Nashville rather than Australia was going to change the sound? I mean, it's an awful long way from home. There must have been a, even though you've traveled a lot, there still must have been a bit of emotionalism about being away.
Yeah, I don't know. I think, like, you know, you got the 5 same guys. You know, you're just in a room like you are back at home. You know, playing the songs you've written. I don't know. I guess that didn't even really come into our thinking. Just went in and recorded. And
yeah, I was going to say, I think maybe the advantage was that we were away from home. So, like, it was completely, we were in Nashville to make a record, not to sort of hang out with people. So it was easy to sort of stay focused rather than, like, at home, maybe there's a temptation to kind of have weekends off or whatever. But here we kind of stayed pretty focused.
Did you stay in the studio the whole time, or was it... was it one of those? Was it one of those? We're locked in here till it's all over, till it's over, kind of thing.
It did seem
to
endless,
a certain extent.
6 weeks of 11 hours a day. Yeah, so one day off a week. But
yeah. Now I understand you all have a coffee addiction. I think I read somewhere that
I've broken free.
Did Nashville have good? You've broken free.
I have.
Good for you. Good for you. It'll serve you well later in life.
Yeah.
Were there any good coffee shops that you found, or they busted in?
There was one.
Mm-hmm. It was called Crema. We took a while. Actually, John, you found it, didn't you? On the internet, maybe. We always like look up on Google where the best internet in every city is. The best coffee on the internet. Where the best coffee is in every city before we go there, so you can have a few recommendations and then go try them all out. And this place called Crema just did a good brew.
It was really good.
Good. We'll turn you on to some Zeke's here in Baltimore. That's our citywide brew.
All right.
So Boy and Bear is Dave Hosking, Killian Gavin, Tim Hart, Jake Tarasenko, and John Hart. Now, you guys are brothers, right?
We are. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. But Killian and I commonly get mistaken for brothers.
And Tim likes us to say, yeah, we are. And John's standing next to us and like, but he's definitely not, but nobody it knows. Like.
Great. What are we going to hear for the first one today?
Let's do Feeding Line.
Okay, great.
Cool.
Boy and Bear on WTMD.
My body moves in time. We're begging on the feeding line. We're lifting out above this end space. See, my body overflows.
got my whole damn life caught up in moments entirely of yours. And I'm finding it harder to reason in order to grow. And finding it hard is a feeling that all of you know. And oh no, see my body keeps in line, and I got my whole damn life. And oh, I want to be somebody, somebody, someone. You're so desperate now, oh no, you won't let it go. But you bit off your tongue to become one. And nevertheless, when this pain in my chest seems to grow, I'm living it harder to feel what it feels like to know. You know.
Feeding Line from Boy and Bear here live in the WTMD studios. Very, very nice.
Thank you.
So I was surprised to see that Moonfire is only being released digitally in the United States. But why just digitally? Why no hard copy?
I think it's more a matter of time. It's sort of digitally, I think, was just because the record came out in Australia in August. It's kind of like when you release a record now, if it's on the internet, it's all around the world. So I think the team over here sort of thought, well, let's put it on iTunes, sort of make it available and do some groundwork. We'll keep touring. And I think it's coming out, like, properly, say, physically, next year, at the start of next year.
I was going to say a lot less signing at shows.
Yeah.
That's right.
So the band's been nominated for 7 ARIO Awards. And a lot of people in the United States here feel that the Grammys have lost their value. They sort of think... There's sort of a perception in the United States now that the Grammys have become more about marketing more than they are about musical achievement. I saw some footage of previous arias. It looks like a very red carpet. So first, I'm wondering two things. You know, how are the arias perceived in Australia, and two, do you have your outfits picked out?
I think it goes from year to year. Like last year, it's pretty terrible, to be honest. Mm. It's pretty horrendous. But I mean, it was something that I personally always watched growing up on TV, and like really aspired to be one of those artists that got to play at the Arias, and it was cool, you know. Like it was really, and you know, everyone being understated, like, oh, you know, this is not why we do music, but you know, it's great. And I don't know, like, but I think it's gone down a little bit downhill recently.
I think there's like the backstory is pretty much the Arias. I've thought anyway. I've always been a really cool thing. I've always enjoyed watching it, and it's just last year was the first year they decided to do something really different, and it's a different location, a different formality. And they went hard at it, and I think they just really kind of missed the mark a bit.
Messed it up.
And it came off pretty bad. So they're actually, this year, they're going back to what they've done historically and done the more traditional, less cheesy kind of thing. And hopefully it's pretty cool again.
Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed.
Very good, very good. So how was the nominations affected? I mean, if you watch them sort of being that kid looking up and wishing it would be you someday, now that it's going to be you, how does that feel?
It's weird, you know, like it was a great reality check. When we found out that we got nominated for the Arias, we were in Costa Mesa in California playing to 50 people. So, you know, you sort of think to yourself, great, you know, like Australia is 2% of the world market and it's wonderful to be recognized in Australia. But, you know, like we've got a lot of work ahead of us and, you know, we've got a lot of people to play for and, you know, hopefully to be able to build a career over here, we can do a lot of touring.
It's one of those things where I think we get used to, those things come along sometimes which make what you're trying to do really difficult and it's exhausting and, you know, you get those hurdles all the time and then occasionally you get those kind of bursts of energy and those little successes and those little steps forward. And I think, if anything, the Arias has just been this kind of little bit of wind under our wings, this really nice recognition for what we've done.
Especially if you're in Costa Mesa and there's 50 people. not exactly a big party to celebrate with.
No. By the way, that was a really fun show.
Yeah, that was
cool.
And you played in San Francisco as well, didn't you?
Yeah.
How did that show go?
Wicked.
That was really fun.
What theater was it at?
It was
Rickshaw.
Rickshaw Stop.
The Rickshaw?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really great.
That's great.